Hey there. There are new neighbors on our block, and I want to tell you why one Italian legend had me nervous to meet them. Plus, a little update after our interactive dinner. This is Zach Martinucci, and you're listening to Against the Grain. For months now, even before signing a lease for our current bakery space, we've been hearing about these new neighbors. Their story unraveled slowly, with scattered details. First, we heard they were opening a brewery in this giant old printing press building. That it was this multi-million dollar build-out, and they would have a patio that seats hundreds of people, paved with imported travertine stone, and a fountain. Later, we'd learn they have one of the biggest new kitchens in Denver. And then, that they were Italian. My friends made fun that I naturally found a bakery in an old Jewish temple next door to an Italian brewery. What could be more perfect? But there was still very little we knew about the brewery. From our side of the block, it felt like watching Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. No one seemed to ever go in or out. Their Instagram was rather quiet, and they had been opening in summer 2018 for the longest time, even as the summer raced to an end, and we still didn't know their progress. I did a lot of internet stalking and asked around. I was fascinated and became borderline obsessed. I learned they'd be making exclusively grape or wine-based beers called Eno beers, that the owner is from Rome and has an executive staff with lots of Italians, that they would make their own fresh pasta in-house, and salumi, or cured meats, and cheese, and gelato, and bread. What are the odds a brewery and a bakery would move into the same city block that had zero restaurants until now, and both specialize in bread and handmade pasta and Italian tradition? I thought this could be a really cool opportunity because we seem to stand for the same things, or unnecessarily competitive. I started prying for answers from our maintenance technician, who was also doing work over at the brewery. "They're going to make this medieval Tuscan bread," she told us. "It doesn't have salt." And that's when I got worried. Because who in their right mind would make that terrible saltless bread that Tuscany, specifically Florence, is known for? It's this dry, bland, pale white bread that's just the worst. But you have to know the story, two actually, the two that make up my personal perspective of Tuscan culture, to understand why this concerned me so much. One, living in Italy, I heard a lot of reasons as to why the famous pane toscano doesn't contain salt. I didn't fact-check these for the sake of the podcast. I'm telling them to you as they were told to me, as folklore. Some say the blander bread is meant to complement the saltiness of prosciutto or other salumi, or to better soak up pasta sauce. But I call balls on that one, as the Italians would say, because I've eaten more prosciutto sandwiches than I can count, and not once did I think, well, this is pretty good, but there's too much salt going on with the bread here. My preferred explanation is that, in one story, centuries ago, before there was Tuscany and there were only city-states, the port city of Livorno decided to implement or maybe raise a tax on their salt. The Florentines, who imported their salt from Livorno, said, "No way, you can keep your expensive salt, we don't need it." And they stopped buying it in protest, almost in the spirit of the Boston Tea Party kind of thing. And when the Livornese eventually dropped the tax, the proud and stubborn Florentine said, "Screw you, we're going to keep making our bread without salt." And it stuck, I guess, or so the story goes. Second backstory. My uncle Fernando, who lives in Lucca in Tuscany, once asked me if I had heard about why the Lucchese, the people of Lucca, were as headstrong as they are. I didn't know. So quite matter-of-factly, as if this were something that happened in his parents' lifetime, he says, "So 500 years ago, the city-state of Lucca was under German rule, and we did not like being under their control or paying their taxes. So the people of Lucca started a secret underground collection, literally a stockpile of gold beneath the city." But again, I'm simplifying this story from memory here. "They elected a well-spoken representative who one day went to the Duke and asked how much it would cost to buy their freedom. The Duke made up some number because he didn't think they'd ever have that kind of money, like 10 million gold coins. And the representative said, "Okay, tomorrow night you will have it." So they pulled their gold out from underground and presented it to the Duke. He honored his word, left them alone, and the people of Lucca have been under independent rule ever since. And that, Fernando concludes, is why we are such a stubborn people. What? That was like 500 years ago, and you still claim that as the reason you think the way you do. But he was serious. And history seems like it's much older in Europe than it is in America, so to speak. I believe those stories and traditions really do play a more significant role than I can imagine as a third-generation Italian-American. These beliefs can be deeply rooted, and I love that some trace back to food. Food, after all, is an everyday part of our lives, so it can be pretty significant. I think it was my girlfriend Emma that pointed out that Rebel Bread and the new brewery were doing very similar things, but for as much as we align, the brewery is so much bigger. They're doing it differently just by the nature of our two projects. They could swallow us. She said, you might want to work together, but what if they don't want your salt? I obviously tell this saltless bread story a lot since it was fresh in her mind, and I think she has a point. I was so nervous about this potential rejection for a neighborly relationship. What if they just flat out reject the people that don't play their way? They just don't take the salt. They don't need to. They're Florence. Because I felt that if they were making the choice to bake saltless Tuscan bread out of all the good breads to choose from and serve it at the restaurant, then maybe they carry themselves with that deep-rooted Italian pride that Fernando was talking about. That's where the story ended for a while. But just last weekend, Liberati, Denver's newest Italian osteria and brewery, opened its doors next door. In the weeks leading up to their opening, I met the majority of the team that have been building this brewery for nearly 2 years as they come in and buy pastries and coffee from us in the morning. They've been very complimentary of what we're doing. And their Italian executive baker, Federica, and my team have become friends and love to share stories and tricks from our different bread backgrounds. And while I've yet to meet him in person, the owner and founder of the brewery, Alex Liberati, and I have emailed back and forth. He's been kind in offering support where he can, and seems genuinely excited that we both get to bring new life and exceptional artisanal food to this unexpected corner of Denver. A few friends of Rebel Bread all went for beer at Liberati's first day last week. We had a great time at the opening. I loved critiquing all the Italian food, but ultimately they're doing a good job. I couldn't critique it if it weren't the real thing. Any kinks were to be expected in hour six of their new giant restaurant service. And we tried the bread, too. The Tuscan bread is as terrible as I remember, and I kind of mean that as a compliment, because it tastes exactly like it did in Italy, so Federica did her job right. And I think it's an interesting choice for them to bring that bread to us here. There's also a bread called Casareccio, which is this moist, fluffy, satisfyingly chewy bread that stands out just as great baking on its own. This whole experience has widened my view on what it means to be a community bakery, or just a community presence. I'm not sure Liberati has set out to intentionally build community. It doesn't say it on their t-shirts like it does on ours, but it doesn't have to either. They're doing something unique and remarkable, and they have the space to seat literally 600 people at a time, so they'll become a community gathering space whether they mean to or not. In our emails, Alex and I noted, and these are my words, how we both are leading with our passions for educating on tradition and showcasing innovation and respecting the Italian values of local, fresh, high-quality food. We have a DIY hole-in-the-wall bakery, and he has the most beautiful brand-new brewery you can imagine, but we stand for the same things. And I think that because we look and feel different, we're going to reach different people in different ways, all with the goal of growing this community and sharing our messages through food. And now that community gets to look a little more diverse. And I think that's for the better. Speaking of growing that community, I want to tell you about our interactive dinner from last week. Before Rebel Bread had a bakery space, these pop-up events around town were the main venues we had to bring people together over food. In my introduction last night, I noted that even though we have a bakery now, it's still very important to us to host events and offer education throughout the city, so that we're intentionally a community presence and not just a place you go to buy bread. The interactive dinner is part cooking class and part dinner party. 20 guests joined us at a beautiful coffee shop after hours to make tigiane, these bolognese girdled flatbreads served with charcuterie and cheese boards. I make a point to talk about how I learned about this meal and culinary tradition from living in Bologna. I ate tigiane on my very first night ever in Italy, and would continue to do so with friends at picnics to use up leftovers, you name it. And show this food or tradition, by using and celebrating local products and being a part of daily life, captures a snapshot of Bologna, and that through my choices and deciding what food and people to bring to our table that evening, we would tell the story of Colorado. Anyway, the event is obviously part storytelling through food and part hands-on rolling dough. Most guests brought a friend, but were all seated at tables with other people. I love that by the end, you couldn't tell who came with who, as everyone was laughing and in conversation across their tables. The dinner was on a Friday night, and on Tuesday or Wednesday maybe, we had sold just a couple tickets. I started to worry and think about maybe what the minimum would really be to go through with the event, and then starting mid-Wednesday, slowly but surely, people started signing up. By Friday morning, we had sold out, and I realized this would be a new event for me, too. The last time, which was the first time, I hosted the TGLA Interactive dinner, I think that I knew all of the guests. They were friends, or at least friends of my friends. We still got to bring new people together over a new experience, but they, of course, were quite willing to go along with it, knowing how hard we'd been working to put this together. Well, on Friday morning, I thought it was hilarious how many people had signed up and didn't know that this whole thing wasn't real. That's not fair. That's what I say. It's totally real, and I'm a professional. But in my head, throwing a dinner party was only ever something I did for friends and family, even if the point were to practice for the real thing, that being Friday night's dinner. What most surprised me, and what my main takeaway has been, is that bringing an experience like this to a room full of strangers compared to friends was both more awkward at first and more rewarding at the end. At the beginning, people truly didn't know each other or what was going on, and they're trusting me and the others to break the ice and somehow share this dinner together. By the end, people that have never met me or been to Rebel Bread have now been through this immersive, full-circle narrative dinner experience, whether they realize that's what they signed up for or not. And if they get it, it means so much more because you watch it click for them over the course of the night. I really hope everyone appreciated the dinner, at the least that they enjoyed the food and the company. And while I am always a little optimistic, I feel like new friends and connections were made, people were genuinely surprised by a unique take on a dinner party, and that a good time was had by all. It was an exhausting few days of preparation on top of regular bakery work, and I'm so content that I left the evening having had so much fun and already wanting to throw another one. There is another interactive dinner in the works for December. I'll keep you posted on that and other events as we go forward. Otherwise, it's been another normal, productive week at Rebel Bread. By that, I mean every week has a new challenge and looks completely different than the last, but at least that change, that growth, is to be expected now. I hope you had a great week yourself, that we all got to catch up on a little sleep, especially with daylight savings ending today, and I look forward to talking to you on the next episode. Bye. This track is Rosalie by Kilobot on Free Music Archive.